Okay. Everyone back? Right. So now we're going to talk about how awareness and curiosity give us the power to change and heal. We stay stuck because we judge. We stay stuck because we judge, even when we don't know we're judging. We judge because we are attached to a story, an outcome, a belief, an identity, an ideology. Unless we are aware of these attachments and judgments and can meet those attachments and judgments with non-judgmental, neutral curiosity, we will continue to repeat those patterns and stay stuck. So this is a quote from Deb Dana, who is a polyvagal theory teacher. Behaviors are manifestations of our internal nervous systems taking actions in the service of survival. People develop habits in early adaptive survival responses, and these habits naturally continue into adulthood. When we can recognize how these responses once served a person by helping them tolerate otherwise seemingly unbearable circumstances, we are able to cultivate a sense of appreciation for how an individual has survived, adapted, and learned through the difficult experiences and predicaments of their life. And spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle says, most people are so completely identified with the voice in the head, the incessant stream of involuntary and compulsive thinking, and the emotions that accompany it. As long as you are completely unaware of this, you take the thinker to be who you are. This is the egoic mind. We call it egoic because there is a sense of self, of I, in every opinion, viewpoint, reaction, emotion. This is unconsciousness, spiritually speaking. Your thinking is, of course, conditioned by your past, upbringing, culture, family background, and so on. So we have to be willing to examine and question everything about ourselves with curiosity and not judgment. And my two favorite questions for this: what purpose does this serve? And isn't it interesting? Those questions just immediately bring a sense of lightness, of curiosity. They don't feel loaded or charged or judgmental. I wonder what purpose this serves. And isn't it interesting? You guys will hear me say that a lot. So I want you to think now, what have you noticed about yourself lately? I bet every single one of you has some stream of something about yourself lately that's just been circulating and percolating in the recesses of your meaning-making machine of a mind. Okay, what are you noticing? Is it stories of like, I really need to lose weight? God, I really need to get off my ass. It's finally springtime. I actually could go outside and go for a walk because it's nice. What's my fucking excuse? Okay, is that the stream we're in? Or is it like, man, I really should be healed by now. Why do I keep having this anxiety? I'm taking all these supplements for it, and I think my gut health is okay, but I'm not sure. Maybe I should go back to the doctor again. Okay, maybe we're in that noticing stream of consciousness lately. Maybe you're in a different one. Maybe you're noticing, like, wow, I'm actually showing up to my life differently. Holy shit. Okay. What have you noticed about yourself lately? So notice if when you answer that question, your language tends toward judgment. So, for example, maybe you noticed that you missed a deadline. We've all missed deadlines. So you notice that you have missed a deadline. Judgment sounds like this. Of course you missed the deadline. You always miss deadlines. You're always late for everything. People must be so annoyed with you. Okay, that sounds like judgment. Curiosity sounds like this. Isn't it interesting that I missed this deadline? I wonder what is contributing to me missing deadlines. I wonder what I need to choose to meet my deadlines. Do you feel a difference in spaciousness in one versus the other? Do you feel how one invites the possibility of like, Oh, well, maybe I could set my alarm for like 20 minutes earlier, right? Easy. That's easy. That doesn't take any effort at all because it was curious and not judgmental. When it's judgmental, it's just like, oh, you're late. You did this. You do this all the time. This is just such a pattern. People are just expecting you to be late at this point. They make a joke out of you because you're late to everything. Where is the space for any other possibility or option or change in that? Like, there's not. Here are my favorite curiosity questions. I ask these myself all the time. I ask these to my friends. I ask these to my clients. I'm going to use these questions with you in our Q&As and group coaching calls. So, isn't it interesting that I da 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 da, whatever it is. What purpose does this serve? So, as soon as you come into awareness that you're maybe doing something that feels out of alignment, or you notice that you're frustrated, or you notice that you're wanting to blame your partner in a conversation. Just being curious, I wonder what purpose it serves for me to do that. What meaning am I making out of this? That's a great curiosity question if you have health anxiety or relationship anxiety. Is noticing that you feel anxious about something and it's related to your body and a sensation you're feeling or a symptom you have, or it's related to a partner's behavior or a friend's behavior or a conflict that you had, and just noticing what meaning am I making out of this? And what's the voice in my head saying about this? There's meaning there too. Here's another one that might make you uncomfortable. Is this actually a problem? That'll save you from giving a bunch of energy to something that's not actually a problem. Is there truth here? There's truth in everything. There's truth even in how you react. There's truth in that, but you have to be curious to find it. You can't be judgmental and find it. Another great one for processing trauma patterns is, when have I felt this way before? That's a great way to start identifying those patterns, is noticing that you will have similar patterns of behavior that correlate to feelings. So judgment says that these are bad: grief, shame, fear, anger, disappointment, unworthiness, depression, anxiety, pain, dread, hopelessness. Judgment's like, those are bad. You don't want to feel those because those feel bad. And then judgment says these are good. It's good if I feel joy and happiness and peace and excitement and contentment and gratitude. It's good if I feel optimistic, if I'm longing, if I have passion, satisfaction, hopefulness. That's good, right? I mean, we all live by these judgments, don't we? So we might as well just make them conscious. Presence is about noticing and feeling. Presence doesn't judge. Presence isn't noticing a sensation in your body and going, oh, this is bad. That's judgment. Presence is not judging. It is not fixing. It is not controlling. And it is not catastrophizing. So if you are being really aware of your thoughts, right? Here's the difference between the kind of grounded awareness I'm talking about and the hypervigilance kind of awareness. Hypervigilance kind of awareness is like, oh my God, I'm aware of this problem. And oh my God, I need to change it. And there's something wrong. There's really something wrong. I got to fix it. Because what if this happens? What if this stuff? Like, you're still aware of the situation and you're aware of what you're feeling in your body, but the awareness has morphed into more anxiety. So you're having anxiety about your anxiety. Whereas grounded awareness is more like, oh, I'm aware that that's here, but I'm not judging it as bad or good. I'm not saying it's not supposed to be this way. I'm not jumping to worst case scenarios. I'm just like, this is what's happening. So we can be present with all of the things that judgment says are bad and all of the things that judgment says are good. It is possible to be present with grief and to be present with joy. It is possible to be present with anger and fear, and it is possible to be present when you feel content. Right? So many people only notice what they feel when the feeling is what they would call bad. but they're not fully present when they're in a state that they would label as good. It's just they want to feel that way all the time, or they think they should be able to feel that way all the time, or they think if they do enough things, they'll be able to set their life up to be able to feel that way all the time. And that's just not real. So presence is about noticing and feeling, even if what you're feeling is fear, or even if you're afraid of what you're feeling, because then what you're feeling is fear, but you're just feeling fear and anxiety. So we're being present, even if the feeling is scary, instead of avoiding. Ooh, now I get to play an Instagram video for you. Okay, this is the first dancing video that I ever posted on my Instagram. So I posted this March 13th, 2023, a little over a year ago. I watched this earlier because I play this at every wake up workshop. And I watched this earlier, remembering that I was going to play it for you. And as I watched it, I was cringing at myself because I was like, oh my God, I'm so much better now than I was then. How embarrassing that I posted this before I actually got good at what I was doing. I should have gotten this perfectly before I shared this with 90,000 people on the internet. Okay. So like I was judging myself, even though this post is about not judging. So I want you to notice just what you feel in your body as you watch this. Okay. Oh, we need volume. Volume. Where is my volume? Oh, it's on the video. Duh. Okay. Anybody feel uncomfortable? Be honest. It's okay. A little bit. Okay. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you for your honesty. We can be real with each other. It's safe. I promise. I'm not going to be mad. Okay. So I got a comment on that video and I screenshotted it. I saved it. I since made videos with it. Like it ended up being the greatest comment I could have received. But at the time, I was horrified that I received this comment. So the comment was long and it was basically like, this is cringy, like watching a baby giraffe learn how to walk. Like awkward, stumbling all over the place, not graceful. And then her comment was like, but keep practicing. I'm sure. Okay. So here's what I did. Okay. So here's the comment. Sexually awkward. It's very hard to see that, but she called me sexually awkward, cringy, like a baby giraffe learning how to walk, but keep going and you'll get better. Okay. I screenshotted the comment. I sent it to my really good friend, Chelsea Horton. She's the founder of Healing Embodied. It's all about relationship anxiety, OCD, and embodiment. Screenshot it, sent it to her. This is our actual DMs on Instagram. I blocked her, but this was a tough comment to read. Give it to me straight though. Is it sexually awkward? Because Chelsea does sensual movement and pole dance. So I'm like sending it to a friend who I'm like, you do this too. And you can tell me because you know what I'm talking about. So is it sexually awkward for real? Do I need more practice before I post these? Okay. And she's like, oh, other people were telling me that I had a dump truck ass. And this person was like, dump truck is right. And I was like, oof, I was not prepared for the internet today. I can tell I'm triggered by the first comment big time because I know the cringe sexual awkwardness she's talking about. And if that's me, I want to know now before I embarrass myself more. Yes, I'm learning and it's new and it's okay for it to be new and to post it without it being perfect. And I don't want to be cringy awkward. And she was like, what the fuck? That's straight up mean. I get hurt. I get why you're hurt by that comment. So very validating me because it was a mean comment. And then I said, I don't need to be perfect at it. I just need to not look cringe. It is fun to me and it's physically challenging. And Chelsea, this is where she starts pushing back. This is why you need conscious relationships in your life, because then your conversations are so fun. She pushes back. What is the actual definition of cringe? That's totally a subjective judgment. She thought that, not you. And I was like, yeah, I guess it's like when someone is trying too hard or their attempt at sexy is actually really awkward. Her comment was mean, I agree, but is there truth in it if we look past the meanness? Like, I'm still wanting Chelsea to be like, yes, she's right. You look like a baby giraffe. Chelsea asked, do you believe there's truth in it? And I was like, maybe. And she said, and if there were, would that be the problem? And I was like, logically, I know there's no problem. And then she pushes back more. What's wrong with being awkward? And I was like, but I don't want to look like that. I think we all know what I mean when I say I don't want to look like that. And then that's when it hit me, fuck, because I judge it. I don't want to look like that because I judge people who look like that. And she's like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, fuck, fuck. She's like, there it is. You just unlocked that for yourself. Do you see how her just being curious and asking me these questions led me to the truth that was already inside of me? Like, and this happened in a matter of minutes, right? It was free. It was just because I had one conscious person reflecting back to me and asking me these curious questions instead of judging me the way I was judging myself. So I ask, why do I judge it? And she's like, it's a weakness. And I was like, but I don't mind being new. The newness isn't what bothers me. I'm proud of myself for trying. I don't expect it to be perfect, but something about it being sexually awkward and cringe is just so ugh. I honestly don't know if I see it as a weakness. And she's like, be curious about it. And I said, I think because I felt so sorry for awkwardly sexy girls before. Like, oh, honey, if only you knew. And like, I'm afraid that someone's doing that to me. And then I'm like, ew, that's gross. That's like gross that I've done that. Right. So sometimes awareness leads us to like uncovering these like things about ourselves where we've been judgmental of others. And we're like, ugh, that feels bad. Like that feels gross to me. I don't want to judge people like that. Right. And she said, what's gross? The awkwardness or the judgment? And I don't know what I said there. Oh, I said the judgment. The judgment's gross. To think that I get to decide that for someone else. And her willingness to risk being perceived as sexually awkward and cringe is really brave. So like in a few minutes with just curiosity and me being willing to like sit with those feelings for myself and notice the voice in my head and all the stories underneath it, I like shifted a pattern that fast. And I was never afraid of, I still am not, of anybody being like, you need more practice before you can do this, or your ass is too big, or you're, you know, save this for your husband. This isn't for the internet. Like I get all kinds of comments and they just don't bother me anymore because I got out of that self-judgment for myself. As long as I was judging myself, what other people thought of me bothered me. As soon as I quit judging myself, the opinions of everyone else stopped mattering. You know, they just don't bother me anymore. I was like, I needed that. Thank you. You were literally like talking to myself. I mean that in the best way. I understood. I feel understood. And she said, this was right before we taught the Good Girl workshop, which we haven't done in like a year, but she's like, every time we run this workshop, we get a taste of our own medicine. And I was like, yes, it's true. Spank. Yeah. So then I was just in a tender place because I'd had a fight with my best friend before that. And then this comment hit me and it was just leaving me in a really tender spot. So we already saw the video. Sorry, I think I was supposed to play that afterwards. We already saw the video. So I'm going to share with you some other comments that were on the video because it just proves that all of these judgments we have are totally subjective to us. But when we're in them or when we're afraid of them coming at us, it's like that's the only reality we can see. But I just want to show you the variation of comments and the way that people were receiving it. So one lady said, I would never post anything like this because I have young adult sons who would be mortified and surely receive a lot of crap from their peers. And then like another person, I feel like dancing seeing this video. I love your moves and the smooth, flowy beats. What song is that? And then the next one, I used to have this confidence till I was shamed by my partner. He later cheated on me 5 years down the line and left me. This has shattered my self-esteem. But yeah, watching you just makes me feel a longing to be that free again. Another one, go ahead and dance away, Lindsay. My parts are my problem and solution. You go, girl. And somebody else, like, I love it. It used to make me uncomfortable too. But then I started to do it and post it until I was no longer uncomfortable. And ta-da, I give no shits. And I thought, damn. First of all, I'm impressed with your moves. My hips hurt just thinking about doing that. And your dancing is lovely. I do have a response to it, and it's really complex. There's a gut reaction of judging the dancing as dirty. Then I get into a trauma response and I start to feel shame and dissociate and or have intrusive memories. Isn't that interesting what a 90-second video can bring up in somebody? I'm uncomfortable with the bad rendition of the chain. No problems with your moves, but bad music choice. First, amazing song choice. Second, everything you're saying makes sense. Okay, like so many subjective experiences. So many. So you are not alone in your judgment. You are not a bad person if you judge. Everyone judges others. Everyone judges themselves. Judgment is just natural human behavior. So nobody needs to feel shame about how judgmental you are towards yourself or for others, because we all are. There's nothing shameful about it. And judgment itself is neither good nor bad, but it does force us to decide, right? The energy of judgment is discernment. So it forces us to decide what is subjectively good and what is subjectively bad, most of which is not absolute, but relative to each person's perspective, the state of their nervous system at that time, their conditioning from their environment, from religion, from institutional education, from whatever, and other personal factors. Right? That's why somebody can say it's cringe and awkward and like a baby giraffe, and somebody else can be like, damn, you're hot. Like, it's so subjective. And maybe if the person who said it was a cringy giraffe, if she had caught it on a different day when she was in a better mood, she might have been like, oh, this is cool. Right? So her nervous system state may have just been really activated at the time she saw the video, and I was on the receiving end of it. Like, I'll never know because I blocked her, but it doesn't matter. So I love, love, love this quote from Ram Dass, beyond all polarities, meaning all good and bad, all right and wrong. I am beyond that. I am. Let the judgments and opinions of the mind be judgments and opinions of the mind. And you exist beyond that. So that's another way of saying this is what's happening. It's really time for you to see through the absurdity of your own predicament. You aren't who you thought you were. You just aren't that person. And in this very lifetime, you can know it. Right now, the real work you have to do is inside the privacy of your own heart. All of the external forms are lovely, but the real work is your interconnection. If you're quiet when you meditate, if you truly open your heart and just quiet your mind, open your heart, how do you quiet the mind? You meditate. How do you open the heart? You start to love that which you can love, and you just keep expanding it. You love a tree, you love a river, you love a leaf, you love a flower, you love a cat, you love a human. Go deeper and deeper into that love. Can you love that which is the source of light behind all of it? Everything in you that you don't need, you can let go of. So I ask you this, whatever you judge about yourself or about other people, if you can go beyond that and love that judgment, what if you just loved it the same way you love your cat, or the same way you love your kid, or the same way you love your houseplants or your chickens or whatever it is that you have? What if you loved even those dark parts of yourself with that expansive love, and you just let yourself go deeper? Do you not think more effective change could happen from that place versus being in shame and judgment and self-condemnation? So the source of our judgment is the voice or voices in our heads that we unconsciously believe and identify with. Our unconsciousness originates in these stories and fears from those stories. So your nervous system is calibrated to the voice or voices in your head. And we have to be aware of these voices curiously if we're going to shift our patterns and conditioning, because no real or lasting change can be made from shame. when you are aware of the voices, they may get louder. They may object. This is normal. Voices often get louder and patterns often get more intense just before we have the breakthrough. I don't have any scientific proof for this. It's just my intuition tells me that the reason this is because we're getting opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to shift the pattern. Like, I think that's why once we become aware of something, the universe is like, let's get this the fuck out of you. Trigger, trigger, trigger. Face it, face it, face it. Feel it, feel it. Notice it, notice it. What's the voice in your head saying, right? And I'm not doing that in an urgent way. I'm doing that in a repetitive way because being challenged about the same thing that many times, how many times you have to meet your self-awareness and you have to shift your choice. Do you see why it takes repetition to rewire the brain? Right? If I'm always used to reacting this way when I get triggered, and now I want to react a different way, and I have the intention to react in a different way, to respond in a different way, I want to show up in a different way, I want to become a new version of myself, of course the universe is going to give me that challenge over and over and over because I have aligned myself with the possibility of healing the pattern. So of course I'm going to face it again and again and again. And every time I face it is an opportunity to wake the fuck up, be aware, be present, communicate with my words and feel my feelings and process that energy out so that I don't need the trigger anymore to shift myself. I will have shifted myself. You are not in the voice in your head because you can observe it. You can notice the meaning that it makes out of the feelings, out of the sensations, out of the patterns, out of other people. You can observe the feelings in your body that get triggered when you have those stories going through your head. I can create a feeling in each of your bodies right now. If you have a child or a pet, imagine that something awful happens to them and they die. Created a feeling in each one of you, didn't it? In that moment, a little, maybe a jolt of electricity or like a something, right? Because thought creates sensation. This is why being aware of our thoughts and aware of our voices in our heads is so crucial to nervous system regulation, because that jolt, that feeling is a little dysregulation, a little adrenaline rush in case there's a survival situation, because you created that with your thoughts. When you realize you're not the voice in your head, you set yourself free from it. You are no longer its puppet, unconsciously repeating the same old stuff because you never woke up to the voice's existence and your own ability to just notice it. So the stories that we tell ourselves about the things are usually much more harmful than the things themselves. The things are triggers, the boundary, the conversation we need to have, but we're afraid of, the symptom, the feeling, the relationship, the sensation. Those are the things. The stories we're telling ourselves about those things are usually much more harmful than the things themselves. The stories we tell ourselves about how we believe others perceive us, that we're too much, we're not enough, we're too loud, too opinionated, too reserved, too rich, too poor, too crunchy, too unhealthy, too fat, whatever it is. Those stories are much more harmful than what most people are actually thinking of us. I mean, they may be judgmental, but they're also in their own heads making judgments about themselves. You see what I'm saying? So we usually are telling ourselves a worse story about what other people think about us than what's actually happening. And most of us have been unconsciously operating based on these unnoticed and unquestioned stories and voices in our heads. And we have made big choices based on those voices. And often we made the choice that was safe, but not expansive. We made the expected choice, even if it wasn't something that we desired. We made an inauthentic choice because it was less risky. We dig ourselves in a little bit more every time into the pattern whenever we do that, because we're denying our authenticity because of the voices in our heads. These voices are really tricky because they're believable. And we all have the life experience to prove that what the voices in our head say is true. Like, we do have that life experience. If you've had something bad happen to you and the voice in your head catastrophizes, you're like, but I have to listen to this voice because I've had something bad happen to me. So I know that bad things can happen to me. So you have the life experiences to prove that what these voices are saying is true. There's a part of you that's really, really afraid. And this is why awareness is non-negotiable, because when we are aware of these voices, then we can question them or we can challenge them and we can start to rewrite those stories in our bodies, because that's where the stories live, not in our heads. So we have several voices in our heads, not just one. Everyone has the voice of an inner critic or an inner judge. It's a bullying voice. It's constantly telling us how we're not enough, that we're not worthy, we're not good enough, we're not skinny enough, we haven't healed enough, we're not pleasing enough, we're not palatable enough, we're not pretty enough, whatever, whatever, or whatever. Everybody has that voice. But we have other voices too. And some of those voices are louder and more prevalent than others. And we're really familiar with those voices. And we often believe them to be our voice, but they're not actually. Some voices are also pretty quiet and maybe only come up in certain instances, but we have multiple voices in our heads. And I would call these our parts, our different parts, if anyone's familiar with parts work or internal family systems. So that's what we're going to do is my version of parts work. I call it the bus exercise. Before I ever knew about IFS or heard about parts work, I kind of downloaded this exercise because I needed a way to help my clients create some space between their higher self and their inner critic or their perfectionist or whatever the kid on the bus was. So I came up with this bus exercise. So if you were to imagine a school bus full of kids and your highest self, your most authentic self, your true self, your soul, whatever you like to call it, is the bus driver. The highest self is the bus driver of the bus. And all of the kids on the bus are also parts of you. So there might be a bully on the bus. There might be a people pleaser kid. There might be a sick kid, a perfectionist, an angry kid. I had one client that had a doom and gloom kid on her bus, was always waiting for the next shoe to drop. Good things never last. Bad things always happen. I had another client who had a fat girl on her bus. Lots of different kids on the bus, depending on your life experiences. And sometimes when those kids get triggered or afraid and they're trying to protect us, the kids try to drive the bus instead of the higher self driving the bus. But kids can't drive buses, right? It's dangerous and catastrophic, and it will not get the bus to its destination safely. The same happens within our own selves, within our parts. If that bully is driving the bus, you are not going to get where you're wanting to go safely or smoothly. So our highest self is the only one who knows how to drive the bus. This is the self energy part. If you're familiar with internal family systems, this is the authentic self energy part. Self is the only one who knows how to drive, who knows where the bus is going, and who knows what to do if the bus breaks down, if there's a problem. The kids on the bus don't know any of that. And they wouldn't be able to know any of that because they're children. And when I say they're children in our own psyche, it means that a part of us gets developmentally kind of frozen or stuck or fragmented at that age time. So my client who had a doom and gloom kid on her bus, actually, I think I tell you guys about this. Ha, me too. It's like I've taught this before. So my client with the doom and gloom kid on her bus, when she was 8 years old, her mother had a miscarriage, and she watched her mother go from being excited that they were welcoming a new baby into the home, and she was excited about being a big sister and all this stuff. She watched her mother go from that to spiraling in depression, hopelessness, and grief. And the core beliefs that formed in her little 8-year-old body without her having any conscious awareness or choice or say whatsoever were, nothing good ever lasts. Don't get too excited when good things happen. It always comes crashing down. Just wait for the next thing to go wrong. It always does. Okay. And that became a story that she was living her life in for a really long time that kept her from ever being present in anything good or positive, because this kid would see the good, positive thing happening, hijack the bus from the bus driver, the higher self, and go, nope, it won't last. Good things never last. Bad things are happening. It's just going to come crashing down. Just you wait. It always does. Is this resonating in anyone with a different part? Can you think of your own parts that do that? Yeah. So when we sat with this doom and gloom kid, she found that this kid who came to her as a boy was 8 years old. He was trying to protect her from getting her hopes up and then being disappointed. And he was trying to protect her from how she felt when her mother was unavailable to her because of the depression about the miscarriage. Even though a horrible thing happened to the mother and she lost her child to an 8-year-old, for whatever reason, the mother is not available, that registers in that child's body as abandonment. Even if it's not even the mom's fault that she has to abandon her child because she's depressed. Okay. So these kids on our buses are really exerting a lot of energy to try to protect us. And many of them do not have the message that we have this adult self energy that can take care of us. And we don't need an 8-year-old or a 4-year-old or a 15-year-old kid to protect us anymore. We need that part to become integrated into the self, honored and guarded, not kicked off the bus, not gotten rid of, but integrated into the self so that that child doesn't feel like it has to hijack the bus and go into those trauma patterns anymore. So when the doom and gloom kid drove my client's bus, she would get sucked into cyclical thinking and hopelessness and like, why even try? Basically was a freeze response in her nervous system. And what I want you to notice about your own kids on your buses is that they have their own unique patterns and nervous system states. And it's the trigger of the nervous system, the feeling of the nervous system that makes the kid want to take over and hijack the bus, because they want to protect you from that feeling. Some of these kids feel immense shame. Others feel immense anger or grief or disappointment or betrayal or responsibility or perfectionism, hypervigilance, catastrophization, self-isolating. You keep going. So we were able to, we used visualization and imagination because I believe the imagination is a portal to healing. We used her imagination to talk to this doom and gloom kid. And we asked him, if you aren't spending so much money trying to protect my client from feeling disappointment and hopeful, what would you rather be doing? And the kid wanted to play at a specific stream in Colorado. So we visualized her taking this kid by the hand and leading him to the stream, and reassuring him that she was not going to ignore him or try to get rid of him. She wanted him to be in a place where he could rest and play instead of taking on adult self-responsibilities. Because he had to take on those adult self-responsibilities when she was 8 years old in order to survive that abandonment and loss of her mother. So she promised to check on him daily, and she did. And he was happy to be playing by the stream, and his voice wasn't banging around in her head anymore. A few months later, the doom and gloom kid got triggered and hijacked the bus, but she was able to immediately realize that he was feeling unsure and unsafe, and he needed some reassurance that self-energy was able to take care of her. She gave him that reassurance and love. She led him back to the stream, and he's never come up again. He hasn't resurfaced. So this process is completely opposite of how we are conditioned to treat ourselves. We are conditioned to pathologize these aspects of ourselves, that they're bad. I shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't react like this. I'm wrong if I do this. I'm shameful if I do this. I'm a victim because of this, or how, whatever the story is. We're conditioned to pathologize these parts of ourselves. And when we discover that it's a younger, wounded part that's just trying to take over to feel safe, we often want to reject that part of ourselves. And we were just like, if I could just get rid of this stupid voice in my head, I'd be okay. If I could just kick the kid off the bus, I'd be fine. If I didn't have this part, I wouldn't have this problem. But this is a part of you. It's just a fragmented off part of you. It got developmentally stuck. We can't heal these parts of ourselves by rejecting them. We heal them by integrating them. They're allowed to ride the bus. We want them to be on the bus. They're just not allowed to drive because they've been driving for a long time and we haven't gotten to where we want to be. So it's time to let the self energy take over and drive the bus. So the voice or voices in your head are not bad or wrong. They are part of you. They're allowed to be there. We just don't want them to take over. And you can't reject them or get rid of them as much as you might want to. You're not a victim to the voice in your head. And you may not have been aware of the voices in your head before now. And that's okay. There's no judgment in that. In awareness, though, you can notice the voice in your head. You can notice the kid who's trying to drive the bus. What are they afraid of? What are they trying to avoid or protect you from feeling? What do they need to feel safe again? How can you provide that safety and attunement? And you can also notice if you have an urge to ignore them or kick them off the bus, right? But you can still choose to be that loving, you know, whether it's your inner child, inner teenager, another part of yourself, but just that loving part that's like, it's okay. I'm still here. Even if you try to take over, I'm still here. How do we need to get you back to your seat? What do you need to feel safe? So please set the intention to practice more awareness of the voices in your head. You're going to learn really fascinating things about yourself when you do. And this is going to be a foundational part of your awareness and healing process, is noticing the voice in your head. And now that you've heard me talk so much about it and you were able to notice it earlier, you should be able to practice it with no problems. You'll just have to remind yourself to do it, especially if it's not a practice you currently have. All right. A lot of us have lived a lot of our lives being controlled by and reactive to the voice in our heads. And we've made unconscious choices that don't align with what we desire, what we need, or who we are authentically. But an unconscious choice is still a choice. And then we make the unconscious choice. We repeat the pattern. We do the opposite of what we want. We limit ourselves in some way. We make an unwise choice, whatever. And then another voice, or maybe the same voice, then comes along and shames us. So sometimes we have the perfectionist kid who drives the bus. And the perfectionist kid is driving the bus, and you're not perfect at something. And then the bully comes along and is like trying to beat the perfectionist kid up. So now you've got two parts that are like warring with each other. And then that creates shame, right? Well, you didn't do it perfectly. You're no good. You're worthless. Like, you're whatever the story is. It's like we know what we're doing isn't working, but because we don't understand why we do what we do, we just keep repeating it and repeating it. And then the shame cycle repeats. And the way out of that shame cycle is awareness of these parts of ourselves and doing work with them and being curious about them, instead of being like, ugh, I'm not supposed to be like this. I got to get rid of it. I got to suppress it. I have to mask it, or whatever it is that you do. So I'm going to go ahead and let you off the hook. Just in case anybody has a perfectionist kid on your bus, and this entire time I've been talking about kids on the bus, their voice is loudly telling you this is so hard and you're never going to be able to get it right. Even if you're aware of the voice, you aren't strong enough to change. You're never going to get this right. You're not going to be perfect at it. You will not get this right 100% of the time, and no one will. So your perfectionist kid can go back to their seat and like chill out and have a snack, because you're not going to get this right 100% of the time. And that's okay. You're allowed to make mistakes. There's no universe where you notice the voice in your head every single time and choose the opposite every single time. Sometimes choosing the opposite isn't even the goal. And what if that can just be okay? What if it was okay? Oh, I didn't notice it that time. I repeated the pattern. I'm sorry. I'll do better next time. Okay. And isn't it interesting that there's a part of you who believes you have to get this right every single time? Isn't it interesting that you're not hearing a voice that says, it's okay if you don't get this right all the time, you're human. It's okay. Isn't it interesting though, that that's not the first place your mind goes. The first place it goes is like the judgment and the kid driving the bus and beating you up. So isn't it interesting is curiosity versus you'll never figure this out. It's too hard. You're too broken is judgment. The difference in the energy of those two things is very, very, very palpable. I'll never figure this out. It's too hard. I'm too broken. Does anyone know what nervous system state this is? I'll never figure this out. It's too hard. I'm too broken. Anybody throw in the chat what you think. Nicole says freeze. Stephanie says freeze. Yes. Yes. Good. I can tell some of you have done nervous system 101. I'm so proud. Okay. Yes. It is the state of freeze or collapse, immobilization, shutdown. Nothing good happens in that state. I mean, unless you're resting, but then you're not in judgment if you're truly resting. So is it not possible Oh, sorry. It is not possible. Jesus, that's not a question. It is not possible to embody your awareness and conscious choice if your nervous system is collapsed. I want to repeat that. Please let that land. Marinate for a second. It is not possible to embody your awareness and conscious choice if your nervous system is collapsed. When we collapse back into a familiar but dysfunctional pattern, when we collapse back into coping mechanisms or shame or addictions, when we collapse into just talking about it, but we don't take action, when we collapse back into a toxic relationship or unkept promises to ourselves, that's what I mean by collapse. So we can have awareness of our body's cues and sensations, our nervous system state and our window of tolerance, which we have a whole workshop devoted to the window of tolerance, the voices in your head, your unconscious reactions and choice, the sacred pause, which we're going to talk about in a bit, and creative non-binary choice, which means the whole spectrum of possibility. That's what awareness gives us access to. And this takes practice. You are not going to be an expert in embodied conscious awareness after this workshop. I'm so sorry if you were hoping to leave as an expert in this, who could then go on to teach it and post about it to your millions of followers. If this is all brand new information for you, welcome. You're going to have a lot of fun practicing, but it's going to take a lot of practice. And I'm still practicing, and my teacher is still practicing, and her teacher is still practicing. It's a lifelong thing. It's not an end goal or a destination. So conscious choice is an active process, not a passive process. It's a call to action. You can't answer the call to action from a collapsed state. So we talked about that dissonance earlier. You know that dissonance you feel when you're faced with the choice between what's familiar, but maybe not really what you want anymore or not serving anymore, and what's new and unfamiliar, but you know it's aligned. You know that dissonance that you feel, that uncertainty? That's what I'm talking about. That like when you're in higher self energy, when you're in authentic energy, it feels natural to choose what is congruent with the reality you want. So if the reality I want is a loving, healthy, respectful, emotionally and sexually alive relationship with my husband, then I'm going to make choices that are congruent with the outcome that I want. So being hypervigilant about his communication cues and picking a fight with him whenever I interpret something that registers as a threat does not get me the outcome that I want, right? When you're in higher self energy, when you're in awareness, it feels natural to choose what is congruent with the reality you want. There may be resistance. I'm not saying it's going to be crazy easy, but you're able to meet the resistance, face that temporary discomfort, which is really just uncertainty because you don't know what's on the other side, and stay mobilized to make an active conscious choice. It takes that anger energy or that perseverance energy to get you to the choice, to get you to take the step, to get you to have the energy to see it through when parts of you want to give up or it becomes too hard or you feel stuck or whatever. Like it takes energy to move through that. And it takes energy to move through resistance. It takes being willing to be uncomfortable to move through resistance, but it's always temporary. All right, so we want to practice awareness of our body, meet ourselves with love and compassion, notice curiously, and choose. So we're going to talk about how to do this. Step one is awareness. So you just notice. Notice that you're feeling something, frozen, angry, sad, disappointed, panicked, whatever the feeling is. Maybe you can even say out loud, I notice that I'm feeling this. Just to like make it conscious. Notice where the feeling lives in your body. Drop into your body and find where that feeling lives and what does it feel like? And can you describe it in detail? So what I mean is if you notice that you feel panic, say out loud, I notice that I'm feeling panicked. That feeling lives in my chest, in my solar plexus. and it feels like a hot glob of swirling yellow yuck that comes up into my chest and makes my heart palpitate and then goes back into my solar plexus, and it's just moving and radiating up and down and it's twisting. That's what I mean by describing sensation in detail. So is it hot? Is it cold? Is it tense? Pulsing? Is it a certain color or shape? Get familiar with the sensation. You guys hold on 1 second. Just 1 second. Hold on. I've got to pause. Just take a break for a minute. Okay, guys, I'm so sorry. Technical difficulty. All right. So our first step is awareness. So noticing the feeling, noticing the sensation, being able to describe it, just letting yourself get familiar with it in a non-judgmental way, or being aware that you're judging it. The second step is presence and love, bringing presence, being fully present with the sensation that you're noticing. When you're describing it, it helps you be present with the sensation. And also, I want to encourage you to place a loving hand on the part of you where that sensation lives. So if it's in your solar plexus, place a hand there. If it's in your heart, place a hand there. Lump in the throat, back of the head tension or headache, pelvic bowl tension, wherever that sensation is living. And that sensation, you're just reassuring that part of you, right? It feels uncertain. It feels unsafe. It's sending you a message to let you know through this sensation. If you can identify the sensation as a certain thing, great. Sometimes we feel lots of mixed sensations and we're like, I don't know what I feel right now. I feel anxious and shame at the same time, or I feel, you know, this and this at the same time. That's totally normal too. So we're just being present with that part. We're loving that part. You may even want to notice it as a kid on your bus. Very hard to get mad at a kid, right? A small child or a baby. This part of you wants to be held and loved, not fixed, not judged, not gotten rid of, not shamed, not rejected, not abandoned. This part of you needs loving awareness, not judgment. So if your first instinct is to notice something uncomfortable in your body and immediately go, oh, no, I don't want to feel that. I'm not supposed to feel that. I don't want that there. That's judgment. So just place a hand there and remind yourself, love. Right? It's probably a younger, wounded part who hasn't integrated with you yet and come to trust that higher self. The next step is noticing. And all of this is kind of happening very quickly and at the same time. So it's not like, okay, first I'm naming the feeling and describing it, and then I'm placing a hand. Like, you can be doing all of this at the same time, but noticing the stories of the voice in your head. So what is the story that the voice in your head is telling about what you're feeling or what you're triggered by? Is it blaming you, or is it blaming someone else? Is it shaming you? Is it saying, this is too much, I can't handle this? Is it saying, this doesn't work? Just notice and remain in that loving presence with your body. The mind is a meaning-making machine. What meaning is it making out of what you're feeling? This is how we notice our judgments and attachments that we have to our state and our stories. And the next step is to choose. Make a conscious choice. Choose how you want to respond to what you're feeling rather than reacting. When we're triggered, we react. But responsibility is the ability to respond and not react. So how can you use your agency and sovereignty to take care of yourself? What would your highest self choose? If fear wasn't present, what would you choose? Do you need to choose to set a boundary, to stay in the discomfort a little longer, to walk away and take a break, to reach for a nervous system CPR tool? All of you got nervous system CPR as a freebie when you got this program. So please, if you're feeling triggered, use those tools there. That's what they're there for, is for your oh shit nervous system moments, okay? So from the moment you become aware that you're like in a trigger and you're noticing sensation in your body and you're holding yourself, and before you make that choice, there's a pause. There might be a longer pause. It might be a split second, but there's always like a shift, and that's the pause that happens. And it's crucial, because if you're unconscious during that, you're going to repeat the pattern. If you're conscious as you're paused, if you're present with what you're feeling, you're more likely to interrupt that trigger by responding in a way that supports your goal to face your trigger and widen your window of tolerance, or supports you in choosing the choice that aligns with the outcome you want or that you need, that's for the highest good of you or a relationship or a child or whatever. So again, those steps are being aware, feeling, holding yourself, noticing the voice in your head, pausing, choosing. And the more you practice that, it really does become second nature. And it's, you don't even have to think about the steps anymore. You will have to practice this over and over. And maybe the voice in your head is creating a story about it. Like, really, why does this have to be so hard? Why do I have to practice? Or there must be something wrong with me because I didn't get it right on the first try. I still repeated the pattern. It's not fair. I just want to fix it and forget it. I don't want to have to practice. Just be aware, be present, hold that part of you that has that story, love yourself, notice the stories, pause and choose again. Lather, rinse, repeat. So So what if you couldn't make the wrong choice? What if there was no such thing as the wrong choice? Was that like outside the realm of possibility to even think about? If there's an objectionable voice in your head that's afraid that there's a right choice and a wrong choice, and if you don't make the right choice, you aren't healing, right? Notice that, that there's a series of right choices that have to be made in order for you to get a certain outcome. It's not about the right choice or the wrong choice. It's about the conscious choice that supports what you want. And you're allowed to change what you want too. Isn't it interesting? If that part of you is objecting to anything that I'm saying, you're just like, but wait, I'm different. It doesn't apply to my situation. Isn't that interesting? So healing doesn't mean that we make the conscious choice 100% of the time. That's impossible. It's unrealistic. I know how the voice in the head works. I have the same one. We can even be aware of perfectionism that we're unconsciously applying to our healing journey and hold ourselves in that loving presence, right? If you're showing up to the healing journey in this pattern of, I have to do it right. I have to find the right tools. I have to read the right books. I have to do the right things, or else what? Right? That's patterns of perfectionism applied to the journey that you're trying to heal out of perfectionism. You can't heal in the same mindset that made you sick. This also doesn't mean that you're required to face every single trigger. So we're going to learn more about triggers in the next workshop. And when I talk about facing and overcoming triggers, I'm also holding the fact that you have agency and that you are allowed to decide, actually, I don't want to face that. I don't think I'm ready for that. It's okay for you to feel that way. And that doesn't mean that you're not healing or whatever. So you're allowed to practice awareness and loving presence and noticing the voice in the head, and your conscious choice can be to repeat the pattern or to not sit with your discomfort or to zone out on your phone so that you don't have to feel. There are times when I consciously make the choice to get on Instagram and watch cute dog videos because I need to distract myself from a bit because I'm having an intense day and I'm just like feeling and feeling and feeling all day. And it's like, okay, at a certain point, I need a break from this, and that's okay. The point is not to always choose the opposite of what we're doing. It's to consciously choose instead of allowing autopilot to choose for you. So in the health anxiety workshop, which is the third one, we're going to talk about how when you're on the trauma or the hamster wheel of wellness and you're in a health anxiety, like chasing symptoms, trying to fix it, you know, you get into the like Googling of things and, you know, you're all in the bowels of Google. Like that's pretty much how I know almost everything I know is because I've been Googling. But like you can notice that that's one of your health anxiety coping mechanisms. For example, when you're feeling uncertain about what's happening, you go to the Oracle on the internet and you try to find the answers, right? If that's an unconscious thing that you do because you're trying to cope with the uncertainty by finding an answer and you don't even realize that that's why you're doing it, you're on autopilot. But you can notice the urge. Oh, I want to grab my phone. I want to grab it. Okay, I'm sitting with it. Yep, I feel that feeling. I feel you. You're there. I love you. Yep, I would describe it as my heart's beating really fast. My stomach is hurting. I feel hot and sweaty and tingly. Okay, yeah, I'm going to Google. Like, that's allowed. Okay, the point isn't that you do the opposite. It's just that you make the choice instead of doing the automatic thing. And it's that you give your body space and time first before you just react. All right, that is the end of this workshop. We have a group coaching call for this week on Tuesday, the 23rd at 10 a.m. Central. You will get an email about that 24 hours before and 1 hour before. And we're going to take a quick break. Let's make it 6 minutes and come back at 40 after, or now it's 5 minutes. So we'll come back at 40 after and we'll do Q&A. And I think it's okay to be done with the Q&A by like, we'll say 8:40, 8:45. So that'll give us an hour or so for Q&A, which should be plenty of time. So yeah, y'all take a break and we'll be back soon.